Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast. The Andy J Podcast.
Hey, welcome to the latest Andy J Podcast. Very special show for you this week, so I hope you're ready for some laughs, some giggles, and a just really remarkable story of a man who does incredible things and has had the most astonishing opportunities open up because of his creativity and quick thinking and the way he has encouraged and helped and nurtured others. We are giving over the whole show to just one guest, like we do from time to time. This week it is the brilliant Danny Wallace, broadcaster, author, DJ, comedian, producer, and just a man who, well, he's a bit of a Pied Piper. He comes up with ideas and leads people with him on his miraculous journeys. And Danny is great, great fun and really compelling company. Danny and I have a hazy memory of meeting each other many moons ago, although neither of us can actually remember it. It's just, like I say, a hazy memory from our youth. And so unfortunately, really, this was the first time properly we had chatted. And I got to tell you, I thought Danny was incredible company. Really, really good value. Fascinating, insightful. And yeah, I thought he was really, really top. Before we jump into the conversation with Danny, I just wanted to give out a quick thank you to those of you that have reached out since listening to last week's episode with Terry White. Now, obviously, Terry shared her incredible story in the most remarkable way, and it has affected a lot of you. And a lot of you have also picked up on how much it affected me, of course. Having that conversation was not easy, but mainly because I was dealing with a lady who had lived the most challenging of lives and hearing it firsthand. It's one thing reading the book. It's another thing actually communicating with that little girl who lived through that experience. And I have to say, I just think Terry is incredible. I said it enough times last week, and she's obviously aware of it. Her story of survival and the way she's gone on to thrive and achieve and strive and aims to help others so much, it's inspiring. And those of you that have reached out and also reached out to Terry directly as well, thank you. Thank you very much for your time and for taking the time to listen to that. I know we don't usually go quite so deep in the shows, and I'm very, very proud and very pleased that we have done that. And I think we might be doing more like that in the near future. In actual fact, there is a moment chatting to Danny today, which gets quite deep, and we don't shy away from the big conversations. Nonetheless, this is a much easier listen, if you know what I mean. And yeah, whether you take us in the car with you, on your commute, on your jog, walk around the house, make a cup of tea, whatever. I hope you enjoy the next hour or so. Danny's great company. And you find out why right now.
The Andy J Podcast.
I am very pleased to say that we are doing what we sometimes do on the show. We are stopping our usual sort of method of having three or four big celebrities and chatting to them. And instead, we've got one massive celebrity for the whole show. This is a man who's dreamt it up and lived it out. He's been there, started the cult, worked around the world. He's been played by Jim Carrey. He started his own country. He's written 17 books. He's changed lives with advice, wit, and frankly, his Pied Piper ways. He can only be one man. That man is Danny Wallace. How are you doing, Danny?
I'm very well. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. But I think describing me as a massive celebrity, you know, I think people will be right to call Ofcom for misleading the public there. But the other stuff was true. So thank you.
Well, I was thinking about this. I mean, obviously, you know what it's like when you're about to chat to someone. You tend to think about them quite a lot and you try and live in their world a little bit. And how do you feel about me calling you the Pied Piper? Because you are very much a think it up and they will follow.
Well, I like to create things that people can get involved in. And I've always been interested in kind of human behavior. And it's only now that I'm sort of a bit older and I look back at the things that I've done that I realize the connections between those things and the fact that I tend to like people who have a couple of things in common. They like to get involved. They're fundamentally decent people and they've got a sense of humor. And I think that if you've got people like that around you, you're always going to have a good time. And so, yes, I tried to involve people in, as you say, I started my own very friendly cult. I am a cult leader. And I pronounced that correctly. I started a country, so I was a king. And I do like to create kind of little underground social movements or things that we can all have fun with that that teaches a bit about living life.
Does it ever, because obviously, Danny, a lot of this is it's very playful, it's great fun, it's always in the spirit of kindness and togetherness and fun and engagement. But does it ever kind of get to your head a little bit when you kind of, you know, chuck an ad in the paper and boom, the next thing you know, you've got thousands of people doing whatever you want?
Well, when you do it kind of anonymously or kind of under the radar, you're sort of starting again. That's kind of how it was with Join Me. I wanted to see whether people would join something without knowing who they were joining or what they were joining or why they were joining or what joining even really meant. And the thing is, I didn't know either. And I think sometimes it's fun to jump into something and discover the kind of the lessons of it or the message of it or what it should be as you go. So when all these people joined me, I had no idea kind of what I was doing. I just knew I wanted people to join. And this was pre-Facebook and pre-Twitter. And nowadays you can just, you know, click a button and follow someone or, you know, become a fan of something or sign a petition, lend your support. But back then you didn't really do that. So I asked people to send me a passport photo to a P.O. box address. And I didn't tell them why. I just said it is a requirement. And that was almost like with like a religion. People had to put their faith in someone not to do the wrong thing and had to put their faith in it and just kind of, you know, trust. And this they did. And that meant so much to me that I decided, well, I can't use my powers for evil here. I can't use them for mischief because, you know, part of me would have quite liked to kind of undertake a little bit of mischief on the streets, just kind of, you know, weird sort of almost like hidden camera kind of stuff. But I decided instead I will use them for good. So I called them the Karma Army. And I just said, do random acts of kindness for a stranger every Friday, and we'll make every Friday a good Friday. And that's what they did in their thousands, in their droves, and so many great things happened as a result.
Do you know, that's been something that I think has been consistent with whatever project you've dreamt up and created. There's always been that feeling of kindness and niceness and happy to it.
Well, I hope so. I'm an optimist. I've always been an optimist. I think that, you know, recent times have tested that. The last sort of 4 or 5 years have maybe taken the edge off of that ever so slightly. But, when I write the books, for example, I write them in the way that I would tell you the story if we were down the pub together. And, you know, when you write something, you're trying to make friends with the reader and you want the reader to have a good time. And these stories, they sort of lend themselves to kind of having a good time because they are, you know, positive. And you mentioned Yes Man. I mean, you know, what could be more positive than just saying yes? Mm. And I'd found that I'd been in a time where I'd found it easier to say no to stuff and just no to, you know, going out or meeting up with friends. And, you know, I was in that stage that I think we all get to sometimes where even before the person has finished speaking, you're thinking, how do I get out of this? So they go, they could say, you come along and it's going to be the greatest night of your life. And you already you're going, I can't, I have to stay in, you know, I'm watching The Weakest Link or whatever it is.
Which is a very valid excuse, to be fair.
A very valid excuse. But it was about pausing and going, I'm not going to get out of this. I'm going to say yes to whatever it is. Because, you know, you're as likely to meet the love of your life at a bad party as you are at a good one. Which is something that many people who since have written to me. They've gone to the bad parties because of Yes Man, and they've met the person they were supposed to be with.
That must be quite surreal, because I guess even now, you know, decades later, you must still get people going, because of your book or the film version of it, you know, I've done this and it's thanks to you. Is that slightly weird?
Yeah, it is. But it's also lovely because, I'm assuming, you know, statistically, some people probably said yes and had a terrible time doing something, but they tend not to get in touch with me. It's the ones whose lives have changed somehow because of what they did. I think they would have got there anyway, but maybe the book just gave them permission to try it and to say yes to more things. I don't advocate saying yes to everything. I do think we can say yes to more things. And it does get surreal. Not long ago, well, maybe a couple of years ago, actually, a guy called Mason got in touch with me, and he had read the book, and he lived in Los Angeles, and he decided to travel more and broaden his horizons. And so he was just every weekend when he could, finding a cheap flight somewhere, a super cheap flight, and just going. And he was having a great time. And I said, look, if you're ever in London, give me a shout. And he wrote back, kind of treating that as a yes moment, and said, well, I could be there next Friday night. And he flew to London.
Brilliant.
And we met up, and we had a great time. And, we had a few drinks, and I showed him a couple of the sights. And then off he went to the next adventure. I think the next day he just flew to Oslo, just because he suddenly realized he was in Europe and he could. So, there are people who do these, incredible things. But if you want something really surreal, going back to Join Me, the cult I started, when I started it, everyone involved through the nature of it was in their sort of 20s or 30s. And then we all kind of grew up. And once a year, there's a big meetup. And, it's been going about 18 years now. So the last couple of meetups that I've gone to, I walk into the pub and there's lots of familiar faces. But over to the right, there are just dozens of children. And they're all children born because of Join Me. Their parents meeting at one of these things and getting married or... And so there's all these, and I don't know how they describe me to these children. This was our cult leader, and we met because of, it's so that for me is very surreal. The fact that there are lives, there are actual functioning humans that came from it.
You should have had some kind of clause that if any offspring were kind of derivative from this, they had to have Danny Wallace in their name somewhere. I mean, then you could have, that would have been quite a little something like that.
Absolutely. Or perhaps just, I get 20% of the will of the parents, something like that. That would have been forward thinking on my part. There's a couple of little Wallaces out there, though, but only as a middle name. But I'll take that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can come up with something else that changes that. Who knows?
Yeah.
The first name scrapping show or something. I don't know.
That's, exactly.
That's what you do, the ideas, and I don't. That's not a good idea. I've got to talk to you. I mean, you've mentioned Yes Man, and I've been thinking about this for a while because, of course, it happened, if you don't mind me saying, it happened so young in your career. I mean, to get something that was so significant. I mean, what is it? $290 million grossing movie. The book sold in a bazillion different countries in loads of different languages. I mean, that, when you were in your 20s, is pretty staggering, isn't it?
It is. I've never really thought about that, really. But you're right. It's kind of, I suppose I started quite young. I started writing for kind of magazines. And when I was in my teens, and I'd write about video games because I was super into video games. And then I was less into video games, but I was into writing. And therefore, a lot of the people that I was knocking about with, they were also writers, but they were slightly older than me. And so I got a good, 5 years of experience in before I went off to university. And I went to university because I had all these ideas and I wanted to know how to make them real. And there was a media course in London. And everyone always, knocks media courses, but it was absolutely perfect because it had like equipment that I could use. And we were being taught by people who would do jobs like yours or like your producers or documentary makers would come in and teach us how to make documentaries. And we'd be told to question the media sometimes, which I think that kids these days should absolutely be taught. But I was there so that I could get to grips with the equipment, really, so that I could be learning how to make my ideas real, whether it was a radio idea, whether it was maybe a TV idea. It was extraordinarily useful. So when I left there, I had all these kind of tools, like abilities that I realized that you can make things real. You can have a chat in the pub and have a great idea, and the next morning you will never, ever do it. But I was in a position where I was like, you can do these things. I could do that. This is what I'd need to do. And so I started and, I became a producer in comedy and I was making things with other people's ideas or I was giving ideas to other people. And then I thought, I don't really want to be in an office. I want to have adventures, and I want to see what you can do. You know, if you decide to live your life a certain way, if you decide to take a certain risk. And so I was doing stuff reasonably early, but absolutely, you know, Yes Men happened in my 20s, and then the film and all the interest afterwards. It was I'm very lucky, you know.
It's an interesting one, because there's that old phrase that, you know, you get what you're ready for. You know what I mean? I might have just made that phrase up, but you know the gist.
Yeah, I've never heard it, but I like
there's
it.
It's a phrase a bit like that. But, you know, sometimes...
Yeah, there's that old phrase you've never heard.
There's an old phrase that I've just created. But but sometimes, you know, and it does ring true in a sense, you know, I've often thought to myself, I had a conversation with a guest a few weeks ago that I simply wouldn't have been emotionally capable of doing before being a dad, for example, you know? And yeah. I sort of think to myself in my 20s, could I have been in Danny's shoes, you know, with a massive movie star playing me and all the rest of it? The answer is probably not, because I was a bit of a hedonistic random so-and-so. It would have gone to my head. I don't know how you stayed grounded and how you managed to just sort of go, all right, cool, I'm not going to let this get to me. This is amazing, but there's other things to do.
Well, I've always felt like you should be grateful for the thing that's happening and not expect the next thing. And you have to work for the next thing. And I think that kind of helps. And also, you know, when you work for yourself, as you know, you have to keep working. And you can't become. I mean, I've got friends, people that I've known in the past who, you know, I'd knock around with, and then they would get some success, and I would watch them turn into different people. And that was always something I found quite troubling. Kind of ungrateful, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have to be careful never to let anything go to your head. And also you've got to realize that, you know, whatever's happening in the moment could stop, you know, very easily tomorrow, which is why I've always tried to do lots of different things. And I always think of my career, if you can call it that, as like an office chair. And, you know, I'll sit at this desk for a bit, and I'll do that as well as I can. But then if that stops, well, I'll swivel over here and try this direction for a bit. And so, you know, you end up just swiveling around and doing lots and lots of different things. But that's because I want to try everything. And if there's something I haven't done, rather than thinking, well, I'm not allowed to do that, I think, I wonder if I could do that. And I give it a go. And the thing that links them all is I find them fun, fun or exciting. And I think that my philosophy, you know, in the early days was always, do what's fun, go where the fun is, but make sure you do the fun well so that you then get asked to have more fun. And also to remember that you're not in competition with anybody except for yourself.
Right.
So you shouldn't feel that pressure or that kind of anxiety that we all do. You know, I think there was a certain sense of relief when lockdown happened for a lot of people, because you realized what a rat race things can be. And it was like everyone had to just take a breather. Well, not everybody, you know, not our frontline staff, and certainly not delivery drivers or people in supermarkets, but people with silly jobs like me were told, you know, take a breather, reconsider, slow down, and reassess. And that's what reminded me of that. You know, it's kind of, yeah, you're not in competition with anyone except for yourself. Just try and outdo yourself. That's all.
Yeah, that's really wise. You know, I was wondering how kind of sage-like you'd be, because I've obviously read lots and lots of your books and read the articles in Shortlist frequently and all the rest of it. And I've always thought, this is a guy who's kind of got a very old head on his shoulders. You know what I mean? And it's so telling to hear you say that you've watched people you've known get successful. You and I have been in the industry a similar amount of time, and we've sort of moved in similar circles. In fact, I think we had a random night together in the arts on Frith Street, but I
have right.
The most hazy memory of it that I can't tell you any more than that.
I have no memories of that weird little underground bar that aren't hazy. but it's one of the few places that I've been banned from.
Oh, brilliant.
I think I was more or less banned from a hot dog place, but I was also had my membership rescinded by the arts club. And this isn't some fancy members club. This was £2 a year, I think. Because the DJ, who looked like something out of Spinal Tap.
DJ Rooney.
Was that the guy?
DJ Rooney. I remember him. He used to drink hooch.
Well, that says a lot. Well, he was spinning his wheels of steel, or whatever you say, and there were some people trying to get in, and they were waiting out in the cold. And so I pointed at them and looked at him and said, shall I let them in? And he nodded at me. And so I opened the door and let these poor people in from the rain. And then he stormed over to me and told me I was banned and had to get out.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know, I'm a controversial guy. I'm streetwise.
You're a maverick. I mean, that's...
I'm trouble.
That's crazy. I wish I could remember our night. I've been trying to summon up some memories of it. I have none, I'm afraid. But that's...
It would have been sticky floors and an underground, slightly claustrophobic atmosphere.
Yes, indeed. But I guess the point I was trying to make is we have moved in similar circles. And I, like you, have watched people get successful. People that I've known from the start of their careers. And watch them get successful, and like you've asserted, I've watched them change, and it's been a huge disappointment, because you kind of go, oh, darn. I remember, this is a sort of tally, really. Rob Brydon at the British Comedy Awards, he'd won an award, and his acceptance speech was one of my favourite things in the world ever, because he simply stood up on the stage and he went, I'd just like to say thank you to all the new friends I've just made.
And yeah.
He nailed it in one. You know, it's that fickle thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Rob Brydon has always been someone who would give advice to people about how to kind of be, because I think success came quite late to him. So he was able to kind of see the kind of the nonsense of it and appreciate it. When it happens to people, you know, a bit younger, it's not how they treat you as a friend or a peer or whatever. It's how you watch them treat people who aren't in that industry that you find excruciatingly embarrassing. Because you should always be grateful if someone comes up to you because of something you've done that they like, whatever it is. You've shared something together. If someone likes one of my books and comes up and talks to me, or they say, I've read your book, I say, which one? I already feel like I know them a bit because, like I say, it's like sitting in the pub with them and I know that I've told them that story and they know these things about me and we've kind of been on that journey together. And so you owe it to them to be nice, welcoming, thankful even, not dismissive, which happens way too often.
You're a very nice man, Danny. It's lovely chatting to you. Just sort of, this is a really nice chat. What a nice guy.
Well, don't forget, I was banned from that place. So
well,
I can't be, you know.
Poor DJ Ruley and his
poor guy.
His smooch-loving ways. I mean, it just feels harsh. Let's go back to the start, Danny, if that's all right. Because you've had an interesting beginning, you know, not an atypical one, in the sense that, firstly, only child. And I say that because I was thinking, how many only children do I know? About three. You know, it's not a particularly common thing these days, at least in the UK. But secondly, you moved around a fair bit. Scotland, Berlin, Bath. You know, you had to restart, I guess, in three different places.
Yeah. And Loughborough, maybe four. And then, you know, it never felt strange to me being an only child. And I always wondered why we have such a bad reputation. People think that we are spoiled or selfish. And it never really made sense to me because, you know, I don't know why, but two of my best friends are only children. And like you say, most people tend to have brothers and sisters. And, but they are just lovely. And I think what being an only child taught me, and I think taught them, was a sense of how to be, a sense of how to make friends, a sense of feeling fortunate to be around others. Because like you say, I would move around a lot and I'd have to walk into so many rooms as the only kid there, or the only kid with no one else to kind of play with, and make friends fast. And on holiday, I'd have to, you know, go off and find other kids and just be like, I'm off to make a friend and, you know, we'll do my best. And, that's how I kind of grew up. And I think that probably helped with, for example, when I was doing, you know, there was a period where I was doing a lot of kind of TV presenting, and that would really help, because you had to become someone else, a more confident version of yourself, and one that could put people at ease. You didn't want to annoy people particularly because, you know, you got one shot usually with a lot of people. So you have a sort of an outside sense of yourself. And I've got three kids now. My wife is one of five. So she grew up with four brothers in a noisy house full of conflict and jealousy, I imagine. And so we've gone halfway with three. And I'm sort of working out how that works because I've got no experience of it. and I'm seeing how they are with each other, and how great it is also to have someone that you hopefully will be able to rely on for the rest of your life. You know, I'm certainly feeling the being an only child now, because just 6 weeks or so ago, my dad died.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
And that's been, it's difficult when you've got no one to really split the grief with.
Right.
And you can't really split it in the same way with your mum, because now you have to look after her as well a bit. And it's a different type of grief. And, you know, they've been together every day for 57 years. And so you then have a job to kind of step in, and not having a brother or a sister is, I guess it's a slight disadvantage, and also makes you acutely aware of your own mortality. So, happy Saturday, everyone.
Yeah. Yes, I'm really sorry, Danny.
That's okay.
I don't want to open up difficult conversations for you if you don't want to have them. But you know, losing someone as significant as your father is something that reframes everything, isn't it?
It absolutely does. And it makes you think about the questions you didn't ask. I think I'd been preparing for it for a long time in some ways, because I suddenly remembered a tape I made, a recording, where I was sitting around, this is about more than 10 years ago, but I was sitting around with my wife and my parents. You know, we were eating at their house, dinner, and I got my tape recorder out, or my, you know, digital recorder, and I just started to ask them questions about the day they met and their life together before me. And I was worried I'd lost this recording, but a night or two after, he went, I found it. And it's such a precious thing.
Yeah.
And I think that we can all record stuff on our phones. And if you are sitting there with your mum or your dad at some point, and it feels right, just record them, ask them, interview them, you know, interview them properly, just about things you don't know. What their bedroom was like when they were growing up. My dad grew up very, very poor. And I didn't realize until I started talking to my auntie just kind of how poor. And I wanted to know about his room in Carlisle in the 40s. And of course, it turned out he didn't have a room. And I didn't know that. And I wish I'd talked to him about that. But you get into the everyday, don't you? And you get into talking about today and what's happened yesterday and what's happening tomorrow. So, I would say if anyone's listening and, you know, you are, you know, at that stage where you're thinking, you're realizing that these things, these life-changing events can happen, as we all do, as it hits us, you know, slap bang in the face sometimes. Do that. And that's what I did. And I haven't been able to listen to it, but I know I've got it. And that's enough.
Yeah. No, that's amazing advice. And also, you know, I would sort of say, just as someone that's lost someone very, very close to me as well, one of the strangest things about death is that for some reason, and maybe it's just me, you sort of forget what they sound like, if that makes sense. You remember how they look, you remember how they feel and smell and whatever else, but the sound of their voice is never quite as clear. And actually, I understand why you haven't listened to that back yet. It took me a long, long time. I had a recording of my friend and I couldn't listen to it for a long time.
Yeah.
And then when I did, it was very difficult, actually. Very difficult indeed, because it brings back
another
sense that you don't, you know, you have a visual memory and you have photographs everywhere, I'm sure. But that the sound of their voice is, it takes you back to a different memory. And it's quite difficult, actually.
Yeah, because it's a moment and it might be something insignificant that they're saying, but it's how they say it and the cadence and the lilt of their accent, if they have one. And it's a moment. And those are difficult. I mean, photos are moments, but there's a distance there. And when you hear the voice, when you are, you could easily be talking to them. I think that's a different level. And something pretty difficult.
Yeah, I read somewhere actually that it's at some stage soon, the sort of with AI and virtual technology and whatnot, you'll almost be able to live into a memory. You know what I mean? With one of these devices, almost sort of like Minority Report type stuff. And you sort of think, God, yeah, I mean, that would be amazing and also heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah, I think so. It might be too much for our brains right now. But VR. And, you know, there are some weird things that are out there right now. There's an app where you can put a picture of almost anyone from history or even your own history in there. And it kind of animates them in that sort of deep fake way.
Yeah.
And it's spooky. And it's funny. I wasn't sure if my mum was sort of ready for it, but there was an old photo of my dad when he was in his 20s. And I thought, let's give that a go, because it'll be the man she met. And and we both fell about laughing because it was absolutely rubbish, and it did the weirdest smile you've ever seen in your life, and he would have laughed with us, and I'm sure he was somewhere.
Good, yeah, they can be very strange. I've discovered that I make an incredibly realistic Hulk, so
very good.
It's very useful to know. And presumably, sorry, we won't dwell on your dad, but obviously, you know, you're a father to three children. I'm sure that you have found that the lessons he taught you as a dad are ringing true in your own life every minute of every day with your kids, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was always very patient, fair, kind, and funny. And I try and instill as much of that in my kids as I can. When they come back from school, I don't say, "What did you learn today?" I say, "What made you laugh today?" And by asking that question, I get an answer that no other parent at the school is getting, because all the answers will be different about laughing. Whereas if you say, "What did you learn?" Well, pretty much everyone is going to say about Egyptian pots or whatever. But asking about laughing, it opens up a perspective that you don't normally get, because it's like being invited into the playground. You know, one kid said this and this guy did that, and they laugh at the kind of the memory of it. And you start to see what they find funny, who they hang out with. And you're pleased that their day involves, you know, joy rather than just Egyptian pots.
Yes, I'm the same as you, actually. I never ask about the learning. I'm always like, who did you play with today? What was the game?
Yeah.
What were you doing at lunchtime? You know, that kind of stuff. Because it's just, that's the side of your children you want to know about, isn't it? I mean, well, I say some people might be more interested in the academic, but for me, I'm like, not bothered in the slightest. Do what you want. You know?
Yeah, it's that thing. It's, you know, have fun, you know, get involved and be nice. Those are the sort of the six words that you know mean a lot to me, whether it's in work or whether it's in play. Be nice, get involved, and have fun.
I've got that written down, Danny. That was the first thing I wrote down. I always write notes about, I never write questions or any sort of talking points, but I always write notes about people. And for some reason, that is the exact, have you quoted that a bit? Because I've got that exactly down in my
have you?
Yeah.
I wrote it for, I summed up, I had to give a speech to some students once. And that's what I distilled everything down to, those six words. So, yeah, so you may have seen that.
It's literally, I've got your name at the top of my notebook. I've got multi-award winning, of course, and I've written of course. And then it says, be nice, get involved, have fun.
Yeah, that's kind of my mantra.
I love it. What a lovely way to live your life. I mean, Danny, obviously fatherhood, you've been a dad, what, for 11 years now? Is that right?
You're almost 11? 11 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Has that changed your outlook on work? And because you are so driven, that's one thing that's very apparent. There's no sort of resting on your laurels. You're always doing. What has being a dad taught you, and how's it changed things for you?
That you've got to keep doing, because you've suddenly got loads more shoes to buy.
Yes.
And you're working on much less sleep, with no spare time. So you have to kind of make those moments count. But it also teaches you that you don't want to say that you've sort of wasted Saturday mornings, for example, because I don't think, you know, having a lie-in or watching a film, I don't think that is wasting your time. I think it's what you need in the moment. But when it's gone, you realize it's gone and it's not coming back for a long time. That sense of, I'll just be able to do whatever I want. But you're part of a gang. You're part of a team, and you have kind of created this team out of thin air, and the team gets more fun every day. And now that they're sort of sparring back and forth they've got great comic timing, and they love each other, but they annoy each other, but they love each other. And it's great to watch this miniature A team kind of come together, and we all get in our A-team van, which I wish was true, but it's not. It's just a family wagon. Yeah, and we go off and we have little adventures, you know. Yeah. But we go off and we have little adventures. And, you know, I was lucky enough to, we were moving out of the city and we knew we wanted to move to the countryside so that they could run around and have fresh air and see trees and, you know, not always see just men spitting everywhere. And we decided that before we moved to the countryside, you know, sometimes I do some work out in America, and because all I need is my laptop really to do what I do, we can kind of work anywhere. And so we went out to LA for a year, and I wanted the kids to have a sunny year, a bit like when my dad we sold the car and bought an old camper van. And then we packed the camper van and we got in it and we drove for days to go to Berlin, just as the wall was falling, because my dad was a big expert on East Germany and, you know, East German literature and stuff. And so we wanted to see what would happen when East and West became one. And so out we went, and it was an incredible year for me. And I went to this American school and hung out with, you know, big kids and ate currywurst every day. And I thought, wouldn't it be nice for the kids to have something similar? And so we went to LA, and it was extraordinary because they were able to meet people that they would never normally meet, and see things that they would never normally see, and understand that there was a big world out there. And it was great. I mean, apart from the obvious, there's some downsides to living there. Out here we, you know, in Britain, you know, there might be a snow warning. But out there they literally have to, you know, do their gun control training, you know, hiding under tables in case there's an active shooter, and these kids are, you know, seven and terrified. But apart from that, it was cool. And it was in not a show busy area that we lived, but the school had some showbiz dads. And there was one kid who was a bit mean to my son one day. And I said to another dad, I'm going to have a word with his dad. And the guy went, I wouldn't do that. And I said, well, is he quite big, is he? And he said, no, his dad is Pharrell Williams. So I was like, yeah, I reckon I'll leave it. It's fine. So that was the kind of area it was. And we had a great year, but then coming back to Britain was like, it was wonderful. And realizing we've had our break and now, you know, let's live real life again.
That's really nice to hear, because of course for a lot of people, LA, you know, the magic of LA kind of represents this sort of otherworldly, made it, it's the greatest place in the world thing. But to hear you kind of go, yeah, it was nice, but it's better back home. That's cool.
Well, it is, because LA is, people go there on holiday sometimes, and I often wonder why, because it's not really a holiday town. It's a mining town, and everything revolves around the mine, which is you know, show business. And there are either people there who've, you know, they've got the tools and they're working in the mine, or there are people standing outside the mine trying to get in. And so it's a very odd place. It's a great place to work. It's not what I would consider, you know, holiday material. Everything's so far. I remember trying to get, you become so used to how far away everything is, right? And I had to go and get a toy, and I went to like the toy shop, I went to Toys R Us, and I tried to get the toy, and they said, oh, it's not in this toy shop, but there is one somewhere else. And I thought nothing of just getting in the car and driving for like 14 miles to get the thing. And that's just normal. Everything takes ages. Whereas over here, if I went to the shop and, you know, I wanted to get some milk, and they said, oh, I'm afraid we don't have milk, but you can get some milk at Heathrow. I would be, you know, in America, you just go, okay, thank you. And you get in the car and you just drive to Heathrow to buy the milk. So you get so used to these vast distances that you just don't over here. And it's a much more convenient place to live.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, you sort of mentioned that, you know, everyone's mining there or trying to mine or whatever. And you have, of course, been very successful in Hollywood yourself. And you've had a couple of almost happened. You know, you've had books optioned, you've had pilots, you've been in sort of several different things that have nearly happened. Is that something that sort of, is that still an itch that you need to scratch? Are you sort of determined and sort of focused on, you know, breaking Hollywood again? Or are you thinking, I'm in my groove, I'm cool?
I think it's, I've never had that real itch. It's like, if I have an idea, and I get excited about the idea, that's what it's about. And then it becomes, right, what is this idea? Is this a book? If it is a book, is it a novel? Is it a kid's book? Is it nonfiction? Or is it a script? And if it's a script, is it a script over here? Or is it a script maybe for, America? And yeah, and I've written a bunch of scripts. And as you say, there was some nearlies. There was a big thing a couple of years ago that nearly happened and then sort of disintegrated, but that's what happens to almost everything. And there was a sitcom pilot that wasn't supposed to happen. I was over there for something else, and I went to say hello to my book agent over there. And he said, well, what's next? And I had never said this out loud before, but I said, I write these columns, and I was thinking about putting them in a book called, and again, first time I've ever said it, Awkward Situations for Men. And his eyes lit up, and he just went, that's a great title.
Yeah.
And before I knew it, within about 10 minutes, there were all sorts of people I'd never laid eyes on before, all in suits, all saying, we're very excited about this idea. and there wasn't an idea. There was a title. And so then I went home, and it wasn't even a book. And I had to say to my publishers, is it all right if I do a book called Awkward Situations for Men? Because I think they want to make something out of it. And we did that. And every meeting went as well as it could have gone. For a moment, I was thinking, Hollywood's easy. Because every meeting ended with someone going, great, okay, let's bring this guy in. And before I knew it, I was in front of the head of ABC. And he said, and who would star in this? And I said, I don't know, that's up to you. And he said, I think you should. And I said, okay. And so suddenly I was going to be starring in a sitcom that should not have existed because it wasn't, anything to start with. And a couple of months later, we moved out and we started filming on a big Warner Brothers lot with extras. And there was all this traffic. I was like, they're going to have to clear this. And some guy said to me, this is for the scene. This is for the traffic jam scene.
Oh, wow.
And, they can click their fingers and make anything happen. And when it got down to like the final three or something for that year, and I didn't know how I would feel either way. I knew it would be great if it went ahead. That'd be exciting. But would I be devastated if it didn't? And I got the call from the head of the whole studio. And he basically told me they wanted to reshoot it, but with an audience, and make it more like a sort of like a Charlie Sheen style thing.
Oh, okay.
And for me, that was weird because it wasn't over, and yet it felt like it was over. And I knew it was kind of dead in the water at that point. And there was a couple of days where I was quite sad about it because there's so much work. But then I had to look at it again from a different angle. And I just thought, do you know what? It was so lucky to even get to that stage with that kind of, backstory. And so few things are made into a pilot. And I thought, I've made a pilot that one day I will show my kids. And they'll be like, why? Who are all these American people? Why are they all calling you Danny? What's with all the traffic? Who's this woman? She's not your wife. So I just thought, I did a thing there. So what's next? And then I cracked on with the next thing.
Yes.
And that's what you have to do. And it's true of sort of anyone in self-employment, really. It's like, some things will happen, some won't, some you won't mind, some you will, but you have to do the next thing.
So is that part of the secret? Have lots of things juggling at the same time, always?
Yeah, it has been for me, because I like to be busy, and I feel very guilty if I'm not busy. It's like being a Catholic, with Catholic guilt constantly there, except I'm not Catholic. The guilt is entirely, it's like I need to be doing something. And that probably goes back to what you were saying about in my 20s. I felt exactly the same as I do now. I need to be doing something. It's just I've got less time now. So there's less going down the pub, as there is for us all.
You mean because you're a father, because of your family, or less time because you're getting
married? I think it's probably a bit of that. You probably do feel more tired. But I think it's more that your priorities shift a little bit. And who's going to put the pasta on if you don't? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally know what you mean. We've had our third son literally 12 days ago. So, yeah, I know.
Oh, congrats.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
it's great.
Just reset the clock though, haven't you, for another sort of, it's like you were doing well and then you were just getting a little bit back and now you've reset to, you know, your freedom is back to in 18 years.
Yes. Yes, we had this exact conversation just a couple of days ago. It was like, it's okay, the house will be quiet maybe in 18 years, maybe, perhaps.
Exactly. Everyone's suddenly sleeping through the night. It's like, oh, no. God.
Yeah. No, it's, you sort of forget how knackered you get, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Right there, right now, right in that tired whirlwind at the moment. I'm loving it, but I'm also, I hope Jenny doesn't think I'm exhausted because I'm exhausted. But yeah, it's brilliant though. It's absolutely brilliant. Completely lost my track of time. So the sitcom that didn't happen that might happen in front of the audience. I mean, are they thinking, because you had a Charlie Sheen experience, is there a sort of connection there? Are they kind of thinking you could have the new Two and a Half Men on your hands and you'll be the Manly Men, or however the theme tune goes?
Well, that was always the hope. The reason, I mean, they spend so much money on pilots out in America because they can. Because if they have one hit, so for example, the guy that called me, he was in charge of Two and a Half Men. And all of those, and the Big Bang Theory and all of those, because if you have one of those, then one of those pays for all of the others, pays for the pilots, pays for the ones that don't make it, pays for the ones that they put out, but go nowhere. And they just write that money off because there's so much of it coming in. I mean, I remember when I was out there and we were about to shoot, someone said to me, oh, Kelsey Grammer, you know, Frasier, he's shooting something at the minute. And, you know, do you want to have lunch with him? And I was like, well, yes, of course I do. That would be amazing. And nothing was said for a few days. And I went, is that Kelsey thing? Is that still happening? Because I'd been to see his show being recorded.
No, I hadn't been thinking about it. Just
yeah, because I'd even been to watch him record his sitcom, the new one that he was doing. And my God, that took forever. Because you think of Kelsey Grammer as everything he says, you know, is just perfect and incredibly articulate and all that. But he forgets his lines, you know, like 50 times, and has to sort of redo it constantly. And the lunch didn't happen. And it was because the night before he'd gone on, like, I think Letterman or one of the big talk shows to plug this new sitcom, which had just started. And it didn't do well in its sort of debut. And they'd already filmed 9 of them. And I think they just took it off air and just threw the other 8 away. You know, however many it was that they'd already filmed, paid for, rehearsed, you know, got all the actors in, got all the crew, got all the audiences. Just never saw the light of day. And I mean, that's got to hurt. But then Kelsey Grammer just picks himself up and goes, right, what's next?
Yeah. Well, bring back Frasier.
Yes, please.
Seems to be what they're doing, isn't it? I think that's the
point. Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, that's good.
Maybe that was the thing. Okay, well, we tried him as another character. Nope, didn't work. So
just bring back Frasier.
Get the doctor back. It'll be fine. Everything will be fine. Yeah, brilliant. Okay, great. Wow. What a wild and wonderful world you live in, Danny. Is every day sort of spectacular and fascinating and, gosh, what crazy thing's going to happen to me today? Or are there some normal moments for you?
I went to, I tried to go to the bank yesterday and I walked all the way there and it was shut. And then I just walked home.
That was yesterday.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, you especially in sort of lockdown times, you're looking for kind of any form of excitement whatsoever. So, a bank being shut was a mild anecdote that I've now told nationally. So, no, of course, no. There's a lot of, you know, prep goes into projects that you hope will see the light of day. I mean, the thing is, you talk about all the things that have happened, but so many things haven't happened that people never hear about, that, you know, time will have gone into. There'll be thoughts and jokes and ideas and concepts that are just stuck in a drawer, you know, because they didn't work out. So I think that there can be a sort of a misconception that you sit down and type something and it becomes this thing, but that's the one that made it. That's the fish that made it to shore. There's still loads swimming about or gasping on the beach.
They might get a sitcom someday, though, those guys.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, maybe. You never know.
You obviously just need to do a lot more drugs to be Charlie Sheen, and then, you know, you could allegedly.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Allegedly. No, I think you're past allegedly with it. I when he was going through his, let's say, resurgence, I went over to cover his tour. He was doing a tour.
Yeah.
And that was fascinating. And what I found weird years later was I was going to these like stadiums, I suppose, in Dallas and wherever else it was. And he would come out and just ramble. There was no show. It was just a man rambling. And he would sort of talk about running for president and how he was the chosen one and how he had kind of tiger blood. And people were, they adored him, but they adored him because he was successful. They didn't like him because they got his message or thought he was cool. They absolutely adored his money and his success. Uh-huh. And years later, watching a Trump rally, it was exactly the same people. They put everything into the fact that this guy who was just rambling, who was saying he was special, who was being mean about people and saying he should be president. They didn't care about any of that. They just cared that he was rich and he was successful.
Gosh,
and that was that. They all thought, this guy speaks for me. And there was no difference at all that I could see between a Trump rally and a Charlie Sheen comedy show.
Blimey. It's a mad world, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
Try not to think too much about it, but it is a bit frightening.
Yeah.
Daddy, we're going to talk about the book, which incidentally, my eldest is 7. So I read it to him in 2 nights.
Ah.
So
cool.
Yeah, it was really cool, actually. I was lucky enough to be sent the book with a week's reading time. And I'm thinking, oh, yeah, that's fine. That's, you know, I'll comfortably have it read before chatting to Danny. So that'll be cool. But my eldest, 7-year-old Harrison, he was just kind of, well, more please, Daddy. You know, and it was a 2-night wonder. You know, we would have done it in one hit if I hadn't been utterly exhausted. He was up for it. He wanted to keep going and keep going.
Oh, brilliant.
And
that's great.
It's very important to him that I tell you that he thinks it is very, very, and I can say as many verys as I like, good.
Good. I'm pleased. Well, say hi to Harrison. I'm glad he liked it. Yeah, I read it to my daughter and it was we went through it pretty quickly, but then I knew everything that was going to happen in it. So, you know, no real surprises for me.
Well, it's called The Day the Screens Went Blank. And I mean, helpfully, it's a title that rather reveals what's going to happen in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was one of those ideas, like I was talking about earlier, where you go, oh, imagine all the screens went blank. I mean, what could that be? You know, And realizing, of course, it would be a story for kids, because particularly in the last year, we've all become so much more reliant on our screens, and whether that's for communication, you know, ringing up the grandparents or kids keeping in touch if they're lucky enough to have one with their pals, homeschooling, and just entertainment. And the idea, and also, you know, in a sense, you know, babysitting as well, which has become a lot more useful when you need those moments when you're all, you know, at home together. And I had the idea, weirdly, before lockdown and before any of this, these weird times happened. But as I was writing it, I realized that even though I was writing about this strange fantasy world where one big event has happened that has rocked all of society, I realized that actual society was weirder than anything I was writing in my book. And so I then had to write about all the screens going blank while letting some of this kind of this madness that we've been through seep in. Mm. You know, not being able to leave your area, or food shortages, or conspiracy theories, or any of these things that kind of have seeped in now happen to this little girl who realizes that the screens have gone blank and she can't contact her grandma, and she doesn't know if her grandma is okay. And you can't just pick up your smartphone anymore and hit G for grandma, because we are no longer in those days like when you and me grew up, where you would remember everybody's phone number. You'd have everyone's phone number in your head. And so I wanted to sort of bring this little family together, put them on a mission to save grandma, but take away everything that has kind of developed in the last 30 years, so that they would sort of bond with their parents as well, because their parents could tell them about life growing up when you couldn't just press a button on your, you know, on your screen and watch whatever film you wanted. You'd have to go to a shop, walk into the shop, ask them if they had the film you wanted, and if even one other person in your town was watching that film that weekend, you weren't allowed to watch it. That's there was right. one copy. It sounds mad.
Yeah.
And to a kid, you might as well say, you know, I'm in black and white from 1830, because you sound mad, like this terrible old world. But for us, it was pure and open, and
you had to do stuff if you didn't rewind the tape.
Yeah, exactly. With all these, like, you know, it'd be interesting to find out who was the last person in Britain who was fined for not rewinding their video. But you know, these stories. And so this family, they set off on a mission to get to Grandma, who's on the other side of the country, because they can't phone her, email her, Skype her. And they haven't got GPS in the car anymore. And GPS for me was just like the greatest thing in the world, because it meant finally I wouldn't have to use a map and I wouldn't get lost, you know, all the time. They can't really, you know, they have to pay by cash everywhere. They don't know how much petrol they've got. You know, all the screens in their car are, you know, powered by that. And so, yeah, it becomes a kind of a mix of our generation and the new generation, and seeing what happens when we meet in the middle.
It's a really lovely, it's a very rewarding read, actually. Of course it's funny, and of course it's engaging, as you'd expect. Respectfully, Danny, that's what you'd expect from Danny Wallace, right? You expect it to be laugh out loud funny. You expect it to have a feel-good vibe to it. But actually, the way it makes you think as well, I loved that it wasn't just phones and tablets. You know, I loved that the TVs were down as well, that you couldn't use anything in the car, the sat nav and so on. All of that was just brilliant. Because initially, from the looks of the artwork on the front cover and so on, you think, oh, okay, so they're going to live without their phones for a bit. And you keep thinking, well, that's going to come back online. But I love that actually when they start on this journey, actually, no, it's every screen, every single screen that could do anything to help human beings is gone, or entertain us or distract us or whatever. It's all gone. I loved it.
Yeah.
It's a very,
good.
Very
I'm glad.
Engaging book. It's great fun.
Well, I hope that, you know, kids, I think it'll give parents as well an opportunity to talk to kids at this weird time where the world is a lot more worrying and concerning than it's been. And it's so early in their lives that this has happened. And how do you talk to them about it? And I think that this is a way of having some of those conversations about lockdown and about the pandemic, but without talking about a scary disease. By talking instead about, you know, another huge change that they can relate to, which is, what would I do without my tablet?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And actually, kindness permeates the book as well. And being a decent human being is a really important message that you seep into it. My eldest wanted me to tell you, it was important for him, that his very favourite scene, although he had to think long and hard about his very favourite scene because he loved so many of it, but he did say the cow in the caravan was particularly brilliantly funny.
Good, I'm pleased. Have you ever seen the film Clockwise, the John Cleese film?
Yes, yeah.
I wanted it to have a slight sense of that. So a guy, you know, everything's going wrong for him. He's got to get to this place to deliver a speech. He's got his mission. And it's just how he gets there. And I wanted to have that kind of disastrous road trip kind of vibe, but for kids. And and stick a cow in a caravan, because why not?
Yeah, because why not? Exactly. Oh, no, it's great. It's so much fun. Danny, I knew this was going to happen. I knew that an hour is a precious amount of time of anyone's company. But I knew that we'd only really get to scratch the tip of the iceberg with you, because you have done so much. I mean, I could list off the gazillion other things I'd love to chat to you about, but we haven't got time. So what's the point? But you're a busy man. So I guess I have to say, Danny, what's next? What's the next mountain that you're going to summit?
Well, there's something I'd always wanted to do, and so I used this opportunity to try and do it. So there's something coming soon, and I don't know how much I can really say about it, but it's like things I've done before, but it's nothing like anything I've done before. And it's a kind of club that you can join, and I want people to, and I think it'll be fun. But apart from that, that's a mystery tease.
Oh, that's mean. No, tell us all about it.
It is mean.
Give us the exclusive. Come on. what's it going to be called?
Well, if you come, I'll tell you what, as soon as it's ready, I'll give you a shout, and then I'd love to talk to you about it again. But if, you know, but people can, you know, on my website, DannyWallace.com, there is a mailing list. And if anyone wants to know first, they can sign up to that and I'll send you an email.
That's very special. Oh, that's, you see, you've left it on a cliffhanger, Danny. That feels really mean.
I'm sorry. But, you know, it's to be continued.
You're supposed, to end with some life advice or some nugget that we could just go, yeah, okay, great. But no, you've taken us to the suspense level.
You're like, I have. So, and you're going to have to take that. And just like my advice earlier, you're just going to have to go, okay, what's next?
Yeah. Well, can we then do a Marvel Avengers and have an after credits then? You know, let's, the credits are now rolling. Come on, what's the extra scene, Danny? What's it going to be? Who's it going to be?
Exactly. No, my lips are sealed.
Well, they were open for an hour and I really appreciate it, Danny. What a pleasure. It's been such a joy. I've really, really genuinely loved our chat. Thank you.
Yeah, me too. It was lovely to speak to you, Andy. Cheers.
The Andy J Podcast.
My huge thanks to Danny Wallace. I thought he was great, great company. Now, look, before you go, I've got to tell you about one of my major guests that we have booked for next week, because it's a biggie. It's Liam Neeson. Yeah, as in Taken, as in Zeus from Clash of the Titans, as in the Hollywood legend, Liam Neeson. Oh, yes, he will be on the show on the Andy J Podcast next week. I am really excited. I can't wait for you to hear it. Liam Neeson on the show, not the whole guest, not the whole show. We couldn't get an hour with him, but we've got some time with him. We've got a couple of other really, really cool guests actually for next week as well, which I'm really looking forward to you hearing. But Liam is, you know, wow, Liam Neeson. So I just wanted to let you know that's what we can look forward to next week, and I hope you'll join us then. Whatever you're up to, have a really great week. Enjoy yourselves. Be kind. There's a lot to learn from Danny's messaging. You know, he exudes kindness and goes out of his way to do good things and try and make a difference in the world in the most positive of ways. And I sincerely hope that you, the people listening to this, are one of us, one of those people. Let's give out goodness rather than negativity. Have a good week. Make someone smile. Stay happy. We'll catch you on the flip side.
If you're enjoying the Andy J Podcast, we'd love a review. In fact, if you're enjoying the show, why not tell your friends? Podcasts live and die on, well, often word of mouth, so please tell your friends. Like, subscribe, review, and share. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.